Do not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network.
Cool. Welcome to another featured artist special on the Artist First World Radio Network, brought to us with your host, Michael Moltz, our international correspondent for the Artist First Radio Network. He's bringing on board very special guest, Eric Zakar, screenwriter, playwright, lyricist. Hey, Michael, have a good time with Eric, and thanks to both of you for supporting the arts on the Artist First Radio Network.
Thank you so kindly, Tony. Nice to hear from you. And I am sitting across the desk from a lifelong friend who has a quite interesting tale for the community to hear. Eric, why don't you give me and the audience a background of why you're here today to discuss your new project, Without Hate.
Well, I am making a feature film called Without Hate. I am the screenwriter and co-producer, and it is essentially a true story of a hate crime that wasn't a hate crime. And it is the story of three Brooklyn young men, ages 19 and 20 when this thing happened, who are serving long prison sentences for essentially trying to con someone out of
$30.
Yeah. I read the instant messages between them. They were trying to get $30 and nothing more. And
how did they come across this man?
They went to a gay chat room.
Three boys.
Pretending to be one. If I tell the story,
well, let's hear it.
It's going to sound like to a lot of people, because there are people that argue both sides of this. But once they've read my screenplay, once they have heard the entire story, most people have come around to at least these kids should not be serving long prison sentences.
You think they're serving long prison sentences because?
Because this case kind of put this hate crime law onto the map. And it helped a couple of political careers. And basically, it was a high-profile case. And because they went to a gay chat room, it automatically became a hate crime, even though the person who orchestrated the whole thing was gay himself.
So do you think the gay community is pretty much bang this entire affair? Do you think they had any pushes or political pushes against these three kids because they went into a gay chat room to lure somebody in, allegedly?
I don't think there was any evil intent. I think they didn't know. The gay community, for the most part, didn't know the whole story, didn't know all the details, and actually perceived it as another anti-gay hate crime, which it really wasn't.
So your movie is going to come out and show the facts and the truth of this case?
And I've researched, besides being in court every day.
And you actually sat on this case. You were in the room, in the jury, every day.
Yeah.
For how many days?
About 30.
So it was a month-long trial.
Yeah. Well, 30 days minus weekend. So figure maybe we were there 24 days. And I've researched this case to death. I've interviewed people on every side of it. I've read the newspaper articles. I read the text messages between the kids. And essentially, I mean, I would consider myself the foremost expert on this case. I've talked to the lawyers. And like I said, I don't think there was any malice on the gay community's part where they went out and said, okay, let's go after these kids to make a point. I think other people politically involved did do that, but the gay community sincerely believed that they were going after kids for a hate crime. They just didn't have all of the facts presented to them in the press.
Politically from that jurisdiction or politically from outside that jurisdiction?
Politically for that jurisdiction for the most part. I don't want to specifically get into character bash anyone or say anyone specifically had their political career advanced by this particular case. But there was a hate crime.
If you believe you got three innocent boys there.
They weren't innocent. At the end of the screenplay, we say that, at the end of the film, they say that they met the system halfway. That basically, for any cause to go forward, a certain amount of pawns have to be sacrificed since the beginning of time, since any war. And basically, these kids met the system halfway by going to a gay chat room and trying to con someone out of $30. And he ended up dead as a result, but not through what these kids did.
This is why you had to enter your guilty plea?
My guilty? No, I entered my...
I mean, when you had to say, you know, when you sat in the jury room, 12 of you, no, 17
no,
of
no.
you...
I was manipulated, I'm sorry to say. And
you, Eric Zakar, got manipulated. Come on, I know you to be a brick wall.
Well, I've spoken to a half dozen lawyers about this since then who didn't know the same things that I didn't know. This kid was up on 9 charges altogether. Anthony was up on 9 charges altogether, including murder, too, as a hate crime for trying to con someone out of $30.
And these kids never had any kind of priors or not even a speeding ticket or any sort. They were good kids.
They, well, for the most part, yeah.
We know bad kids, Eric.
No, these were not bad kids. John Fox was an exemplary kid. None of us were as good as this kid. John Fox was the hero fireman's son.
So he still is.
Yes.
He's not gone.
He's been in prison for the past 5 years. I don't know what's happening.
So he's a number. Okay, we can say he
But no, well, we'll learn up. John Fox was the hero fireman's son. He had, and I was at his father's apartment where he was with his father after this all happened. He had awards for never missing a day of school in 4 years of high school. He was the only kid in the city of New York who didn't miss a day of school, a single day, in those 4 years. He had an award for doing a community service blood drive that this kid put together himself. He was an almost Eagle Scout. He got the Scouts before he became an Eagle Scout to go off to college and take ROTC. His father was one of the most decorated hero firemen in the city of New York.
So it comes from a good family.
No, but this kid, I'm telling you who the kid was.
Right.
The kid organized community blood drives when he was 18 years old.
Not a pot, not a smoke, not a smoker, not a drinker.
Yeah, he did that stuff, too.
Okay.
But he was an exemplary kid. He was an exemplary good kid.
You think he just made a mistake that way?
He got drunk and went along with this. He didn't even do anything.
He made a mistake. He was intoxicated.
He got drunk and he went along with the stupid idea. He didn't hit anyone.
And he's got
13 to 21 years
for being intoxicated and being
going along with the stupid idea
and being
that nobody had any bad intentions on. Nobody had any intentions except to con $30. I mean, they sent him, they gave him their real email address, they gave him their cell phone number, they gave Michael Sandy, the guy that got killed, he had John Fox's email address, he had his cell phone number. They told him to come to the Comfort Inn Hotel, which was a half a block from where Anthony lived and where he grew up his whole life.
What do the prosecutors know about this guy who got killed, Sandy?
I don't want to get it.
Does he have a history of, maybe he has a history of luring boys?
I don't want to get into that.
All right, why do you want to sidestep that? Is it something we don't want to talk about?
No, it's something that's irrelevant. The fact is that
The man is dead. I mean, it is irrelevant, but he is dead, and he did show up that evening because of these three young men.
Right. Well, he only thought that he was meeting one. They did con him. They did trick him in that respect. But he came out once.
How did Daya?
The first time he came out, he saw four of them, and he didn't feel comfortable, and he went home. And then he decided to come back again because he wanted to have sex with one of them. So he already knew that there might be four of them there when he came back a second time.
Are any of these boys gay?
Yeah, the one who orchestrated the whole thing. And he had gone to...
Is that who he had relations with?
No, he didn't have relations with anyone.
With any of them?
Yeah. They were trying to con him out of $30, but one of them, the one who orchestrated the whole thing.
How were they trying to con him out of $30? What was the scam?
They told him...
Well, a three-count Monty scam?
They told him that they wanted, they told him he was talking to one guy, John Fox, and they sent him his picture. They also sent him his picture and his AOL profile, for John Fox.
Each kid also sent their...
No, one of them did.
Okay.
All right, so if they were trying to do something bad to the guy, they would not have sent him their picture, their email address, their cell phone number. If they were trying to commit a crime, they would not have given him all this information.
Okay.
They wouldn't have told him to come to a place a half block from where they lived with their families.
And they were all intoxicated. Well, they were
all
drunk. Okay. So they were young, and they were
20 years old and 19 years old. Basically, they told them that they needed money to buy pot. And they said, John Fox told them, come buy me some pot and I'll have sex with you. and he said, I could only come with $30. I saw this in the text message. And there were 15 other guys in the gay chat room. If they wanted to rob someone, they could have gone and found another guy who had more money. But then they said, you want to meet us at the Comfort Inn? And he said, I can only bring $30. I can't afford a room. So he told them straight up he was only coming with $30 at most.
Right.
So they were not trying to rob anybody. They were not trying to get a lot of money from someone. They just wanted somebody to buy them pot for the night. And I, like I said, I read the messages between them.
How was the guy killed?
He ran in front of the car because one of them was a little drunk and he grabbed him and he ran away.
Did they do a toxicology report on the man, on the victim? Did he have any drugs?
It's irrelevant to
me. I know it's irrelevant. I'm just asking. It's just a question.
I don't want to. I will be attacked if I talk about this.
I don't want you to be attacked.
All right.
You want me to protect you?
I don't mean physically attacked. I don't want to blame any victims here. Okay. Essentially, they all did something reckless. They all did something crazy. He came out in the middle of the night to a strange neighborhood twice.
Intoxicated. So it's basically the rule at fault. You can blame alcohol for this entire.
Marijuana or whatever.
Drugs and alcohol are the...
Right, I didn't say that about the victim.
Yeah, but I'm saying it, and I can say whatever I want to say, and whoever wants to attack me or come after me, I'm not hard to find. So what I'm getting from our conversation is that it's drugs, alcohol, played an effect in this man's death. At the end of the day, that is a part of it. And these three kids are serving very long sentences. You have one kid from 17... 20 years, another boy from
13 to 21, and the other one is 17, just straight up
17,
no chance. Maybe he could get out a year short at most for good behavior.
Full state prison.
And this was the night, I was up there. They're real prisons.
I
went and visited, I interviewed two of them, and these are real prisons. And I mean, one of them, John Fox, the fireman's son, he's 5'4" and he's skinny, and he's never done anything wrong in his life. And they're also in protective custody in prison because they're accused of a hate crime. So they're in not protective custody as much as... They're not with the general pop. They're with the child molesters. And one of them was in with Joel Steinberg, the child killer.
Yeah, that's mania.
Yeah.
Sure.
And he told me that out of 150 people in his cell block, like 90 of them were child molesters because they couldn't be in with general pop. So they took these kids who basically are trying to con someone out of $30 and put them in with the worst people in prison.
How about the appeal process?
They did not win their appeal. And I have no idea why, because there were so many things wrong with the state.
Is it sealed? Is there no judge or no legal person that this family can go to see why?
John Sampson, the congressman from Brooklyn, who is one of the higher-ups in the state Congress, in the state Senate. What's going on out there?
This is a business. This is this is an ice cream store where they're kind enough. Uncle Luigi is kind enough to give us this fortress. Nobody will hurt.
We're in the best ice cream store in Nyack.
West Nyack.
If you come in West Nyack, you come in here, you will find beautiful women up front. You just heard them. Anyway.
People are enjoying it.
And you'll get the charm of Michael here most of the time.
Thank you, but I've done my elbows and my shoulder hurt from scooping ice cream.
All right.
And bun.
Now we're at the creative part of the day for Michael.
Yes, thank God. Unfortunately, for such a very unfortunate story that I am listening to, I am thankful and grateful to you for letting me read the, few books that I do read and the few screenplays that I do get my hands on. I'm not a big fan of reading stories, but when I do read it and sink my teeth into it and it catches my attention, I do make the attempt of getting the story out. And this is a story that really, every time I hear it, it just, such young kids that go away such long periods of their lives over the stupidity of drugs and alcohol and the stupidity of the court system. From what I understand, that you told me before, the presiding judge over this case wrote this to particular piece of law.
It says you don't actually have to hate anyone.
So I don't get it. Right. How can the judge sit on a case?
And she sat on the appeal.
Unless I don't know something, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so
well,
I don't
get it. They wanted her to recuse herself. She didn't. Not everyone wanted her. Some people suggested before the case that she recuse herself. Okay, let me explain this hate crime law. It says you do not have to actually hate anyone. You have to target a specific group. So if, hypothetically, I'm Jewish and I go to a Jewish website and I pick up a Jewish woman and we have an argument in my car and she gets out and she runs out and gets hit by another car, I could be accused of a hate crime because I went to a Jewish dating site and picked up this woman. It's the same thing that happened to Anthony.
Why do you pick on a Jew? Always pick on Jewish. Well, I'm a fat, bald Jewish guy and you're going to take me outside and because you say you hate me and do me and kill me?
You heard all that, right?
So now that's considered a hate crime instead of a murder?
Well, see, you heard that. Now, if something happens to him on my watch, I get accused of a hate crime because it just became about him being fat and bald and Jewish. If he didn't say any of that, now it's a hate crime against fat guys, bald guys, and Jewish guys. It's not that bad.
I gotta go on a quick diet. In order to get you up, otherwise...
Right, otherwise I'm up on three hate crimes, fat, bald, and Jewish.
And this is not
can't help the other two.
I'm sorry, I really apologize. We don't look to make light of the situation because there are three young
kids. Yeah, but the way to tell
jail.
People the truth is to make them laugh. That's always been
I agree with you, and that's what I'm trying to add to the party here.
Yeah.
And it is said, especially for the parents. And the victim.
And
the victim had a family as well.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely a tragedy for the victim, too, so that's why I don't want to say anything.
I agree. I get it, Eric.
Okay. I mean, I'm not trying to undermine the fact that this is a total tragedy for the victim, but Anthony's father had died, the person that orchestrated this, who was also gay, his father had died less than a year before this happened. Anthony tried to kill himself twice after his father died. His father was in such pain. He was not doing well. And his mother has two small children at home. Originally, they put Anthony up in a jail in Siberia, up by Buffalo, which they referred to as the same prison on NYPD Blue as a prison up in Siberia.
NYPD Blue has a raspberry flavor in the family.
Yeah. We're at a local Louis ice cream store. In any case, up in West Nyack.
Good plug, Eric.
Anyway. We're getting away from point here.
I know.
The point is you got the best ice cream here in the store.
That's why I'm fat, bald, and Jewish. But it's, he was
bald way before that. He was bald when he was selling watches, and he was Jewish then, too. More Jewish than he is now.
Oy, oy,
oy. Anyway, so I lost you.
We were talking about Anthony, who
lowest
sentence there.
Hopefully he
can get out.
He had tried to kill himself twice. His father had just died. His mother had two little children as well.
So you visited this kid. Did you visit him?
No, not him. I visited two of the others. I wanted to visit him, but because of his appeal, they don't want me to. Because of his pending appeal.
Do you know if he's getting any kind of psychiatric
help? I hope so.
No, any of these kids, you know, when you saw them, are they getting any help to make it through this process? Because this had to be, this is like heart-wrenching, especially if you're innocent and you believe these boys to be...
Not innocent, not guilty of what they were charged with.
Okay.
Like I said, they met the system a quarter of the way. They met the system part of the way. The system did just say, hey, let's pick up these kids and throw them in prison.
If this was a federal crime, which they zone out from zone A, B, et cetera. Were these boys issued the highest state sentence? The judge really threw the book at them. He took the book and threw it out in the cold.
Anthony could have gotten 8 years as opposed to 7 to 21. He could have gotten 8 to 21. But he also could have gotten 1 to 3 years for what he was.
So what if they played Monty Hall and they made a deal once they went into court? Would they have gotten lighter sentences, or was this going to trial no matter what?
And they just steamrolled them. I read the sentencing report, the pre-report.
Pre-trial.
Yeah, and all of them, at least Anthony and John Fox, they absolutely should have gotten released on their own recognizance based on everything that they based that kind of thing on. And both of them were held without bail for a year before the trial. Anthony's family raised $1 million
in cash. It was back in 07.
Yeah. Anthony's family raised over $1 million to pay for his bail in cash, and they were held without bail for a year.
After in a race 6 years.
Yeah. I mean, basically, they all should have been released on their own recognizance, but I keep getting taken in different directions here. I was talking about Anthony's mother having to visit him in prison in Buffalo, which is when she had two little children. Now, finally, they moved him close to home. I think
this is part of my process of interviewing you, Eric, is because I'm taking you in different directions because you sat there, you listened to it, you heard it, you ate it, you absorbed it. So every time I'll take you in a different direction, you're going to come back to what's called the truth. And at the end of the day, that's what we're going to get from your show, your play.
Okay, well, let's get back to what you said about Eric Sakar being manipulated.
I find that...
Yeah, well, I'm going to explain it now.
You know, if I didn't know you as long as I knew you, I would say,
Thank you. Now, let me explain it. Anthony was charged with 9 crimes, including murder two is a hate crime, robbery two is a hate crime, robbery 1 is a hate crime, robbery 1, and I got him acquitted on it with the jury. I convinced him that he wasn't guilty on any of those. But the one that they said that he was guilty of was manslaughter, because manslaughter means that you didn't have the intent to hurt anyone, and they just ended up hurt. And you really couldn't have anticipated it. But the other jurors convinced me that if I didn't vote guilty on one charge, which was manslaughter, the hate crime, the whole jury would have been hung, and he would have been up on all 9 charges all over again, including murder as a hate crime. And there would have been a new jury without a radical writer on it, because the DA knew who the problem juror was, and she wasn't going to let anybody like me near the next jury. And basically, the other two kids would have been convicted at that point. They would have been offered something to testify against them. And they convinced me that the only way I was going to get out of that room was to vote guilty on one charge out of 9. Otherwise, he would have been up on all 9 all over again with the new jury. And I figured, okay, that's the only way this is going to end. Then I came out in the newspapers 5 minutes after the trial. If you buy a television and you don't like it, you could bring it back in 3 days. I came out in the newspapers 5 minutes after the trial and said nobody wanted to vote him guilty. Nobody believed it was a hate crime. We all felt badgered. We all felt manipulated. It was in the New York Times the next day that I didn't want to vote him guilty. The jury foreman did not want to vote him guilty. I met with Anthony's lawyer the next day for 3 hours, and he thought he could get this thrown out just based on what I said. And I wrote a 5-page letter to the judge about how we all felt badgered and how I never, ever thought that he was guilty. Anthony's lawyer told me to come to the sentencing. He tried to question me. The judge wouldn't talk to me. The judge said, I don't want to hear anything that he has to say. He can't change his mind after the fact. I didn't change my mind after the fact. I voted guilty on 1 out of 9 charges because it was the only way out of that room, that he wouldn't be up for 9 charges all over again, from what I was told, that he would be up on 9 charges all over again.
Basically a retrial. Throwing out this jury poll, bringing a new... Another 6 weeks of, or another 24 days of listening to arguments.
12 robots instead of 11, because they weren't not going to let anyone else like me near the next jury.
And the other 11 people that's sat on your case?
Well, there was one beautiful, alluring woman that convinced everyone that it had to be a hate crime. She kept saying, homosexual chat room, homosexual chat room. And we said, but they didn't hate anybody. Everybody knew that. But she said because they targeted a gay person in a homosexual chat room, even though they didn't target him to hurt him, it had to be a hate crime. But there can't be hatred without intent. And that's what I was trying to get across to them. And that's what Anthony's lawyer said on the news after this. He said the verdict makes no sense because the manslaughter says there's no intent. And there can't be hatred without intent. And even when I interviewed the 16-year-old who was in prison, the fourth one, he said, how does that make any sense? How could you have hatred without intent? Does a 16-year-old kid know more than the juries and the lawyers do?
Because he lived it.
Yeah.
He probably is sitting in jail. And
thinking about it.
You got one or two things to do. You can either read the law and look to see who wrote it and hire that person who wrote the law.
The person that wrote the law was the person that presided over the case. She couldn't be hired at this time.
I don't think she was. She can't be the only author of that piece of law.
The other two people are probably her best friends, and they're not going to come out against her.
Yeah, you know what? Lawyers are lawyers, and money buys lawyers. That's just the nature of that industry.
Well, John Fox's lawyer, the skinny fireman's son, he said it in court, but he told it to me in person, too, that this is the most heartbreaking case he's ever had in 40 years, he was the prosecutor, then he was the defense attorney. He said this is the most heartbreaking case he's ever had because this kid totally didn't deserve prison time at all. And usually when you're, even you're, if you're a defense attorney, you know when your client is guilty.
Yes.
You might be defending them, but you know,
that's
okay,
right.
You try to do your best you can, but if they get convicted, you're not heartbroken over it.
From what I've seen in the legal system is the best part of it is making the deal and being the first one to make the deal and get the stuff behind you, especially if you did something wrong.
If
you believe that
he
didn't do anything wrong, then you fight like hell to win and to prove yourself innocent.
Yeah, well, these kids fought like hell to prove themselves innocent. And the jury, that wasn't just me. No one thought it was a hate crime. But this woman convinced everyone that it had to be a hate crime because of what the judge said. That because
they're gay children, and you have one out of the four kids is admittedly gay.
And he's the one whose idea was. The rest of them just said, "Yeah, why not?"
Look, they were drunk. What were they drinking?
It was bourbon.
They were drinking beer because I think this was a big mistake. John Fox's father tried to use the drunk defense that it's a teenager's right to be drunk. 33 people wrote letters of support for John Fox to the judge. 33 people wrote what a nice kid he was. He got letters from clergy. He got letters from teachers, from principals in his school, from people in the military.
And judges still read that.
Yeah.
She said
she read every word.
She
didn't care. She still gave the kid 13 to 21 years. But none of these people got up at the trial and testified for him. If they would have, he might have been better. Instead, they tried to use his defense. Oh, the kid was drunk, it's like saying the kid was on heroin, so he went out and mugged somebody. It doesn't work. Instead of saying, look at what a nice kid he was, and 33 people from all walks of life will come out and say it. They said, well, the kid was drunk. He didn't know what he was doing. It's, like I said, that was not a good defense. I wasn't on his jury, but it did not win anyone over, obviously, because he was convicted on three crimes instead of one that Anthony was convicted on.
One crime, one dead person, three kids.
Five lives ruined, then. What do I say in the script? One moment in time changed everything for five principal players and 200 people in their surrounding world. I still don't know how I've come to be one of them.
Tell me about Without Hate. What process are you up to? Have you?
Well, we've got
actors, and you got
we've got a director, we've got producers, we've got money people who want to become.
I got no money. I got ice cream. I can supply you ices and ice cream if you want. I work for chocolate and vanilla. I don't get any green. No mint here.
All right.
So you got some actors on board? Do you want to name names on that? Or
no,
do you
not
want
right,
to keep
not
that
right
under
this,
your hat?
Not right this minute. We have a lot of people. In
and you got some producers. You got your money.
And we got a great director, Sylvia Kampmann, who is winning awards on her first two films at a bunch of festivals. She's got at least 7 or 8 best film awards for the first two things that she did at local film festivals.
Wow.
Film festivals all around the country. I think as far as Toronto, actually, so not just around the country. And she's very passionate about the project, and I'm very excited to have her. And we've got a wonderful casting director, Carolyn Sinclair. And Don Buchwald, Howard Stern's agent, gave us a whole list of actors who's agreed.
Okay.
He's from the neighborhood.
Name I haven't heard in a long time.
He's from the neighborhood. And then I was trying to think of a gift that I could send him to say thank you for all the help he was. Because he is a great man, Don Buchwald.
I'm not taking him.
No, he's really the nicest man you could meet, and a genius, and one of the most accomplished agents in the business. Probably the most gentlemanly other agent I've ever met. And
I know the name, Eric, and I'm not in your industry.
Right.
As I know what you do is not easy to write and to hear these stories, and to, you know, especially this story. I know your other work was comedy, yet
satire,
and you've done some, you know, the thing on Ken Starr.
Well, that was a comedy, but it was also making points.
Yes.
I mean, I wasn't personally involved with what was going on with Bill Clinton, but it was a total atrocity what they were doing to him.
So are you going to use the same type of formula with this?
There are some laughs in the script, but it's a serious drama.
Anytime
you have Brooklyn kids and people like me and in a room with 12 other people and Brooklyn street kids, you're going to have comedy. It's just natural in the dialogue and the way these people talk and relate to each other. And you have a sarcastic guy like me in the jury and a woman who was 10 times more sarcastic than me.
I could think of the first 20 minutes of this film would be like totally, you know, knowing the neighborhood where it happened and knowing the area well, going up there.
Yeah.
We can come up with 20 minutes of material that will laugh your socks off, and at the end of the day, we'll tear eye the hardest guy out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking, again, three kids, four people, five lives changed, and people serving long sentences in jail.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's not just the five lives.
Just for being there. I mean, so these kids are basically just there. We don't know if this guy ran in front of the car. We don't know if he was pushed in front of the car.
No, he wasn't pushed. There were witnesses. Nobody said he was pushed. Nobody even punched him.
They made
it sound like in court, like at least one of the kids punched him, not Anthony or Puck, but one of the kids punched him, but he didn't. I finally interviewed the witness a year after it happened. I couldn't get a hold of the witness. I finally tracked her down, and she said that the police were trying to convince her that she saw them throw punches. But she said, I didn't see anybody throw any punches. I just saw one of them grab him. The other kid didn't do anything at all, and Anthony wasn't even there on the highway. Fox just stood there, transfixed, like in shock. And Sharab grabbed him a couple of times. But grabbed the victim. Nobody,
to stop him from running?
No, not to stop him from running.
Holding him
to
catch a beating.
No, there weren't. He wasn't. I don't know. Nobody hit him. Nobody raised his hand.
There's no physical altercation with these boys, with this man?
No, and they didn't steal anything. They didn't hit him. They didn't steal anything. They didn't have any weapons. They told him to come to a Comfort Inn half a block away from where Anthony lived his whole life.
And he got mowed down by a car.
But he was running away. One of them did grab him.
Okay, that's assault.
Yeah.
And at basic, you tell me he was assaulted.
He was assaulted by one of them.
By one out of the four kids.
Yes. Yeah. And that's not what that back one is the one doing 17 years.
That's
Ilya Shirov case, yeah.
Well, the sentences do vary. You got one kid 17 years, one kid 7 to 21, the other one from 13 to 21.
Anthony got 7 to 21 because I got all the other charges knocked off the table.
Well, you didn't, the lawyer did. You're a juror.
Right, but I convinced the other jurors to knock off the robbery, and when you knock off the robbery, you knock off the murder. I mean, I convinced the other jurors to knock off all the other charges. And I couldn't get them to back down on that one. And like I said, it's the only reason that I voted.
Were you making these jurors nuts? Yeah, I mean, because I know you. When you have a point that you want to make.
Yeah, I was making them nuts.
I'm not saying nuts. Using the terminology nuts, crazy. I'm saying when you want to get your point across and you keep, you know, same way you're telling me that we're going off pace here and we're getting off track.
Lucky at least five of them were mute. They were like, I don't know if they spoke. One of them didn't even speak English, which is true.
You had five kids on a jury, men, adults, that didn't speak English?
No, one of them didn't speak English. I'm saying a lot of them didn't talk at all.
Because it doesn't make any sense.
No, there was one guy who didn't speak English at all. But
he didn't speak English. How could he understand the facts of the case?
He didn't. They let him on the jury anyway.
I don't get it.
We had another guy.
Where are these lawyers?
We had another guy from Africa who said, in my country, a white man would never go with a black man. And even the other jurors that were against me the whole time came down on him about this. They said, this is not about race, and it's not, in this country, it has nothing to do with anything. I mean, this guy thought that this could never happen because, in his world, a white man would never go with a black man. This is how versed he was in American culture, and they let him on this jury. And another guy spoke exclusively Spanish.
That was one guy. Tell me about the other four who didn't speak any English.
No, they spoke English. They just didn't speak. They had nothing to contribute.
So their IQ level was that of a piece of wood.
Well, at least their participation level in this case was.
They were happy to collect their $14 a day being out of work and watching three kids get sent up the river, Eric LaFoy, just disconnected, you're interrupting this interview.
Well, the point that we need to get back on is that These kids need to be out of prison. It's been 5 years already.
Okay,
they served enough time. Like I said, everyone said, even they said themselves, they did something wrong, something worthy of 2 years in prison. Even I don't even think the victim's parents would like to see them in prison for this long already.
No, I don't like to see an hour in jail. But
yeah.
Again, someone's life was taken.
Well, that's the other way to look at it. And the screenplay does not, the film does not take away from that in any way. You know.
Can you give me a little taste of, to the audience, a little taste of,
I'm not going to do that.
I'm not asking you to spill the whole...
We're getting a little taste of it. See, you hear me arguing here, the case, and this is in the film. The Eric character is arguing with the other jurors and trying to explain his point to them.
So call me juror number 13.
Juror number 12. If this woman, was the last...
17 before. How many jurors listened to this case?
17. But only 12 of us were in the room deliberating. We weren't allowed to talk about the case, and they were so anal retentive. If anybody brought it up, they would. That's a separate issue. How this one juror was reporting me to the judge every day, like 10 times a day, for things that I was doing.
Wanted to go home.
No, she was reporting me because she thought I was breaking the rules in the jury room.
It's just a pretty girl.
The beautiful woman who seduced everybody. Yeah, and she would stay late every week, and every day. I mean, and she would report me for doing something wrong.
She didn't try to seduce you?
With her eyes, she did. I mean, there were a couple of little sexual innuendos between us, but she also almost hit me a couple of times. But she actually pushed Chaz outside and came at me and stood like an inch away from me and was ready to hit me.
She didn't spit on you or anything like
that? No, she didn't spit on me or anything like that.
Yeah, it was assault.
Yeah, I know. Well, she said, I'm going to be leaving this jury room in handcuffs, meaning that she was going to hit me and she was going to get arrested.
So you really got under her skin.
I was trying to make a point for this kid's life. I was going up against this crazy woman who I guarantee you is bipolar, who I guarantee you has never broken a rule. You got beaten up when she was a kid if she ever broke a rule.
You know, a legal system that 12 people can send you away, and out of those 12 people, what if one of them are medication?
We had this woman who I guarantee you was on medication.
Oh, you're telling me one guy... You know, you were surprised that he even comprehended the English language.
He did. He barely did.
How does he get on a murder case?
That's all on my phone. I don't know.
And we can't talk about that now. You don't want to release any of that data.
No, it's released. It's out there. He shouldn't have been on the trial. The woman, I would bet you anything. If she broke a rule when she was a kid, she was locked in a closet or beaten up or something. Every little rule.
Have you picked her character yet?
That's the breakout role. Looking for a beautiful African-American actress about 30 years old. That is the breakout role, because this is a supporting character, but she is the most passionate, intense, multifaceted character in the film. Whereas the lawyers just get to be lawyers and the judge just gets to be a judge, you know, they get to do their job. This woman is really passionate, multifaceted, all over the place, schizophrenic. She is the one that we're really showing somebody grateful.
You're really searching out for that one.
Yeah. We've gotten a lot of people possibly interested in the lawyer roles.
Are they just as outraged about this verdict as they, you know...
The actors?
Yeah. When they read the script, they just take it. And just go, how can this, you know, and just like throw their hands up in the air and say, how?
I've gotten over a lot of people. I think my director said it. Which is why she wanted
and
to
the
get
producers,
involved.
People would just push a button to say, what's going on?
Well, you know, my proudest moment, and Duncan's going to get mad at me about this, so I won't say his last name, but there's a reporter for one of the gay newspapers who was following this case and writing about it from the beginning, and he was totally against these kids, even though you couldn't tell it in his articles. He wrote very objectively, writes very well. And even Anthony's lawyer thought that he was on our side. But when I started emailing back and forth with him afterwards and debating it, he was totally against these kids. He read my script, and all of a sudden, he seemed very sympathetic to them. And he seemed like he wanted to see them get out soon.
He heard the inside story instead of reading
it. Right. And I think that's my proudest accomplishment so far, that I turned this guy around. Because he was like the strongest activist against the kids. And if you read the feedback on my website for the film, www.without-hate.com. Look up how to spell the word. Without-hate.com.
Repeat it again, please.
Without-hate.com. If you read the feedback, it did change a lot of opinions. It did make a lot of people passionate about it.
Yeah, I'm sickened by the... I'm looking, you know, on a piece of paper, folks, and I'm looking at numbers, and not numbers, the years.
Yeah.
The years, no.
They're days if you're living them. They're thousands of days.
Yeah.
They're a life you can't get back. I mean, the time you're 20 until the time you're 37 for one.
Boys that should be in college or, you know.
Well, and Anthony, the gay one, the one who orchestrated the whole thing, he was in college. He worked part-time in his family's law firm. And like I said, he was just going through a bad time after his father just died.
So the alcohol on the system, he had no idea. He was just like totally...
Well, he had gone to gay chat rooms before and picked up men. And had sex with them at the Comfort Inn, and they bought him pot, and everything was good. Nobody got hurt. Three different men, including a guy that worked for 25 years at the Department of Homeland Security. Three guys got up on the witness stand and talked about how Anthony had picked them up in gay chat rooms before. And it was a perfectly fine experience. You hear all the... like beautiful women we have in the store here. If you come here, you'd meet interesting people. Uncle Louie's in West Nyack, Michael's ice cream store. Belong to Michael's son, Adam. Anyway, three different men got up on the witness stand and said that I picked up Anthony, gone to the Comfort Inn, they had sex, they bought him pot, nothing bad happened. He was not trying to hurt anybody.
We wanted to buy some pot. We'd take a ride to Coney Island. Now these guys, they can go in a chat room and they can score whatever they want.
Except that it could end up dead. In any case, I asked Anthony's lawyer about this. I said three guys down came up to testify. There must have been a lot more. And he said there were about 50 of them. But how many middle-aged men are going to get up on the witness stand and say they went and picked up a 19-year-old kid in a gay chat room? To get three to testify was not an easy thing. One guy, like I said he worked for the Department of Homeland Security for 26 years, and he picked up, Anthony in a gay chat room. He was like 50 years old. And
so how do you go forward with this? I mean, the kids had no chance of getting out. They had to serve their friends.
I was reaching out to John Sampson before.
Right.
John Sampson is a congressman, and he actually wrote a letter of support for Anthony. He said he knew the family, he knew he was a good kid, and he dropped it. He was a politician who would have gone out and fought for them, and he was black, like the victim. And he was really did not want to see this kid in prison. And I met with him, and nothing ever came of it. I mean, not that I'm sure he has a lot of other things going on, but somebody get to Albany, get the governor to give these kids a reprieve. They are in prison for way too long. They served their time. They served twice the amount of time they should have served for doing what they did. They all know they did something wrong.
How long will it take you to get this in a can and on the screen? So maybe that can motivate a political process to get up there, time, and do something. And what's the timeline on this?
It's taken too long already, but hopefully within the year.
By year's end?
Yeah. Before? Not the end of this year, by a year from today, to have it in the theater and, in South Pleasant, where people could see it.
Gentlemen, we've ran out of time.
Okay. We were having such a good time. We had no idea on how to go by. Maybe Eric might want to come back for another blast. In the near future. Is that all right with you, Eric?
I'm okay. Whenever you want me.
There you go, Tony.
Okay, thanks a lot. Z-Man, Corey King in the studio. Thank you, Michael Moltz, for supporting the arts on the Artist First Radio Network and for bringing such a fascinating guest, screenwriter, playwriter, and lyricist, Eric Zakhar. Thanks for joining us and supporting the arts on Artist First Radio.
Thank you for having me.